on this day 15 years ago. It was on September 11th at 8:46 that American Airlines Flight 11, carrying 81 passengers and 11 crew members, crashed into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. You might remember that. It was 17 minutes later that I observed, watching the news, at 9:03, that United Airlines Flight 175, carrying 56 passengers and 9 crew members, crashed into the South Tower of the World Trade Center. America was under attack. Members of the Muslim group called Al-Qaeda, led by Osama bin Laden, had violently taken control of those flights in order to cause terrorism on American soil. Firefighters, emergency crews, law enforcement arrived on the scene to evacuate the burning buildings and assist with the injured. At 9:43 a.m., Flight 77 crashed into the Pentagon. There were 58 passengers with 6 crew members aboard. And at 10:05, the 1,110 floors of the South Tower collapsed to the ground. 23 minutes later, the 110 stories of the North Tower also collapsed. When you find out that 11:26, that the fourth and final plane crashed, it was Flight 93. It carried a total of 45 people, and when all the passengers for God and country attacked the hijackers and sent the plane to the ground. Today is September 11th. That was a time that we won't forget. It was America's, it was an attack, the greatest attack on American soil. For what took place there, I can imagine if you were to ask those families if they could have anything, what would it be? That didn't happen. Brothers or sisters or fathers, their mothers or daughters, their sons, to have them back. You know, though, we ask people today what would they like. And they, of course, if you're in the pageant of some sort, the only answer is world peace, right? Well, see if any of these sound familiar to you. If you were to ask somebody on the street, would the answers be enough money to feel secure? True happiness, friends, to be able to travel, or not have to worry about work, money, or health. Does that sound familiar? I mean, if you were honest, and if you were to have anything, if you could have anything in the world, would one of those fit one of the categories that you have? I was doing a little research, and I saw that, and enough money to feel secure. Well, how much money is that? Some people think $1 million might do it. Some think more. True happiness in all the things that we have going on in this world, yet there's that emptiness. There's no real satisfaction. And so the answer for some is true happiness. Friends. I mean, we've all got different people that we get along with, we work with, we're friendly towards, we're friendly with. But a lot of people feel like that none of them are really their friends, that they're not that close friend that they really desire, that kind of relationship that they desire. Not necessarily in marriage or something to that degree, but just a real good close friend. I mean, we can know a lot of people, but not really have one real good close friend. How about to travel? To be able to go wherever you want. Not have to worry about work or money or health. Well, except for the travel one, all these answers came from homes with incomes more than $25 million. A survey was taken, and in that survey, those making more than $25 million felt that they did not have enough money to feel secure. They really, even though they had all kinds of money, could buy whatever they want, didn't have true happiness. They felt that they had lots of friends because of their money, but not any true friends. And they didn't want to have to worry about work or money or health. Were you surprised? All those answers sound like answers that an everyday person might give. And we think to ourselves, well, I'd really be happy if I had enough. You know, what the real thing to get, though, Lucy Van Pelt states it. She describes what she really wants for Christmas. So she says, real estate. At least that's what she told Charlie Brown in the Christmas story. I think we trick ourselves into thinking what would really satisfy us. What would really make us happy? Book of Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, he takes and looks at all that there is. God has blessed him. He asked God, he said, God, I would like for you to give me wisdom. I don't know how to rule these people. And God, he said, because you didn't ask me for all kinds of riches, and because you didn't ask me for peace from your enemies, because really what he did was ask for something not selfish, or you could say for something wise, because you asked for wisdom, and you wanted to be able to rule this people the way that I want them to be governed, I'm going to add these things to you. So Solomon has and always will be the richest man to be alive. And in his wisdom, God also blessed him with all kinds of money. I mean, there is silver and gold that about couldn't be counted. He didn't have to worry about his enemies. His father David had taken care of many of them. And there were some dealings with that he had to take care of, but God blessed him and gave him peace. What does a guy that has all those things, what does he hunt for? Solomon, he decides he's going to look at life without God. What is life without God? If I could have every desire that I dream under heaven, what is life like? What can truly satisfy? What really brings purpose? Well, he looked. And we find that fulfilled desires fall short. Fulfilled desires fall short of lasting satisfaction. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 through 11, Solomon, he says here, I said in my heart, come now and I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. But truly, this was vanity. What did he do? He said to laughter, it is madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? He went and he tried comedy, entertainment. He tried to have as much fun as he could. And would that bring a full satisfaction to what life is really about? He says, no, that really didn't do it. He calls it vanity. He says in verse 3, I searched my heart to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom. So it wasn't about being plastered, but enjoying the fruit of the vine, maybe along with that, the great banquets. It says, and how I lay hold of folly till I might do what is good for sons of men to do and under heaven all the days of their life. Is this what man was designed to do? Is to just enjoy all the wine and all that desires my flesh? Well, that's not all he did. Verse 4. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards. I made gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees with them. I made myself water pools from which the water, from which to water the growing trees of the grove. So he did all kinds of building projects. So he's testing life. What is it? I wonder how much time it took him to go through all this. He said, I'm going to try just to have fun. Is that really what life is about? Does that bring satisfaction? Does that bring a sense of purpose? Well, yeah, it was fun, but you know that, what good does it really accomplish? What do I gain out of it? A few moments of laughter and fun. And he went and he decided that he's going to try alcohol. Enjoy the fruit of the vine. And here, alcohol in our day carries a great danger. And also it was a danger in his day. But he sought to satisfy his flesh, the desires, through alcohol. However, here, in a strange way, it speaks of self-control rather than just flat-out drunkenness. He mentions here that he was guided by his heart with wisdom still. And he looks at that and says, you know, that's not going to accomplish it either. I've heard that on cruise ships, that there are very large banquets, and that the food is just endless. It's always out, and it's decorated so pretty, and that it tastes very good. Indulging in oneself and what you can get your hands on. But he looks at it and says, that doesn't quite do it either. So he put his hands to work, built all kinds of things. But after he builds it, it doesn't seem to satisfy him. Because after that, I see in verse 7, he says, I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. I had greater possessions of herds and flocks and all that there were in Jerusalem before me. He tried to see how many possessions that he can get. Not only servants, but also, you know, the flocks generally. In the Old Testament, your status in society, your wealth, if you will, was based on the things that you had. Does that sound much different than it is today? Isn't that what we try to do? Well, I've got the latest cell phone. No, I don't, because maybe it's not out yet. The i7, the Apple phone that's supposed to be out or come out or whatever. And so, you know, I'm a social status because there's a picture of an apple on the back with a bite out of it. Well, no. I don't know that would actually make me somebody. Some people think that. I remember being in school and you know what I had on? I'll let you guess. No, actually it wasn't guess. But there are other people that had guess on. You remember that? The jeans? And the brand name Guess, and at least when I was a kid, that was the pair of jeans that you were supposed to have. My mom was poor and cheap. That's where I learned it from. And she said, well, I could get 3 pair of regular good jeans instead of 1 pair because it has a little triangle on it that says Guess on it. It was mostly for girls anyway. And quite honestly, she had brought us up to the fact that I really didn't care. Now it's still, can you believe it? Still the Michael Jordan shoes. So everybody has to have the Jordan. There's people killing other people for Jordans. Why would they do that? It's a social status. It says something about who they are. It tells other people that they have wealth or that there's something about them that you should respect who they are. It's not limited to kids. It's also adults looking to one-up everybody else to become somebody important. Solomon, he looks at this and he tries stuff. See if that's what does it for him. He continues on, verse 8. I gathered for myself silver and gold, and special treasures for kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, professional singers, and delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So he had great symphonies, and he had great orchestras. He had just a great crowd of people who were professional singers. hoping that that would bring some sort of satisfaction, some sort of joy that would perhaps bring what life is really all about. Moving a little further, verse 8, I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. He says here in verse 10, he didn't keep from himself anything that his eyes desired. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. So I enjoyed doing it, but what did I get? I looked at all the works of my hands, all that he had built, all that he accumulated, all the fun that he enjoyed, and what did he come up with? I looked in verse 11, and on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor which I had toiled, and indeed it was meaningless, vanity, empty, worthless. It's like trying to grab hold of the wind. You can't do it. Try it. You could go outside with a jar on a windy day when the wind is blowing. Stick that jar up into the wind and quickly close it up and tight. Make it real tight though. And then when you get home and you want to surprise somebody, you leave it there on the counter and tell them to open it. And did you know as soon as you break that seal, it practically blows off the lid because of all the wind that comes out of it? You know that doesn't happen, does it? All the teens are going to go home just to check. You know that's not what happens. You can't catch the wind. He's trying to catch what's going on in life. He's saying, what can I do to really find satisfaction? What can I do to really accomplish something? What can I do of really any lasting value? Something gives purpose and meaning in life. And we mentioned it last week, but let me mention it again. You know, how often do we as Christians try to satisfy ourselves with what is going on in this world? We look and we have to, there's nothing wrong with having the latest cell phone or the Michael Jordan shoes or anything like that. There's nothing wrong with it. But if you're looking for that to satisfy your life, guess what? It's not going to happen. Sure, you know, it's nice to have. It's nice to have the money. It's nice to have the prestige of other people. But in the end, we see that if we had $25 million, do you think that would satisfy you? Shake your head this way. Because it sure doesn't satisfy the people with $25 million. In verse 11, it says, there's no profit under it, no profit under the sun. To have all those things, it won't truly satisfy. Now, Dave Ramsey will give testimony. And he'll say that, yeah, when he had a lot of money, he had a lot of fun. It brought a lot of happiness to him. But he'll also mention that it didn't satisfy the soul. Why does Solomon say these things? He mentions it here in verses 12 through 16. He says, I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. And what can a man do who succeeds the king? Only what's already been done. Then I saw wisdom excels folly as light excels the darkness. And the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks around in darkness. Yet I myself perceived that the same event happens to them all. You know what that event is? Death. The certain death ruins it all. You're just going to die anyway. So you think of the man that has the $25 million. Or you think of somebody like Donald Trump, who's got billions of dollars, or worth billions of dollars. Or we have Warren here, Warren Buffett here in Omaha, who I don't know what he's worth. He's worth a lot of money too. Do these people know what they're worth, what money they're worth, I wonder? All that they have. And then you go downtown and you guess what you see? You see some people that are homeless. They're poor. I went with Jason yesterday. We went over to help him move. He has moved to Colorado, but they were homeless. They were living with friends. And finally, tomorrow, Lord willing, and they don't change it a fourth time, they're going to close on the house. So you gotta have, you know, it'd be kind of nice to move in. So he come all the way back to Des Moines area, and we helped him to pack up that truck that he got. And he got a truck, 26 feet. 26 feet of truck. And so we're packing it. The fun part about this is we're packing it, and he says, I got to go to the bank and get the money transferred while I'm up here. And so he takes off and leaves us packing his vehicle. I said, should we call you when we're about done? He said, yes. Didn't quite happen that way. So we're packing all this stuff in there, and you notice things about people when you pack their stuff. It was all out of a storage shed, so we didn't have to like put stuff in boxes. The boxes were already there. And one of the things I noticed is she likes baskets. I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of baskets that are there. I thought, well, that's something you learn about. And some of the stuff I'm packing up and I'm saying, you know, well, they chose to spend their money on some certain things. And other things, I said, well, in some ways they live real cheap like we do. There's people that are homeless. There's people that, you know, my brother does just fine. And there's people that are very rich. And guess what it's going to do? What good it does us all? Not really any, because guess what? You're going to just die anyway. Truth is, we all die, whether we're rich or poor, we're fool or wise, we're esteemed or humiliated. Death isn't prejudice. We all face it. One day, you will die. And then what? Then what? If there's no God, then that's all there is to life. In fact, if you think about it, why would you work and toil and strive to be rich when you're just going to die and just pass it off to the next guy? You know, the next generation won't help you feel a lot better. We try to bring up our kids the best that we know how, don't we? But in bringing up our kids, they don't always follow what we say. It's true that generally speaking, the way you train up a child, they're going to continue to follow that. But at the same time, there's a truth that just because you bring them up a certain way doesn't mean that they are going to follow it. We work real hard. It says here, I said my heart, verse 15, it says, so I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, so it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? And then I said in my heart, this is all vanity. We're going to die anyway. For there's no remembrance of the wise than there is the fool forever. Since all that now is will be forgotten in the days that come. And how does a man die? Same as the fool. Therefore I hated life because of the work that I had done under the sun was grievous to me, and all vanity and grasping after the wind. I hated all the work which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to a man who knows who will come after me, and who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Yet he will rule over all my work, in which I toiled, and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. But this is pointless. It's vanity. Therefore I turned my heart in despair for all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there was a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. And this also is vanity and very great evil. For what does man for all his labor, and for all the strifing of his heart in which he had toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful, and his work is grievous. Even in the night his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. All the things that we accomplish, all the wealth that we accumulate, one day we die and then we pass it off to the next guy. And what do? They blow it all. They didn't work for it, so he gets the reward. Why would I do all that work for somebody else to enjoy it? Well, I hope you're feeling really lousy by now. We looked over this. Just think, all the things that I do, nothing's going to have a lasting satisfaction. There's a certain death that ruins all the work that we did. And what good does it do us when we're dead? I mean, we talk about people that are sports stars. You know, we think about some of the Huskers we're watching on the field. I didn't get to watch the Huskers on the field because they weren't on the right channel. Shame on them. But we won, right? And so we've got heroes on the field. Yesterday, Ohio State was on Nebraska TV, which is very, very disheartening. It's probably some sort of sin, and there'll be judgment for it. But we watched, and Ohio State just slaughtered Tulsa. We were able to watch and see these great players and see their great moves. And guess what's going to happen in another generation? Nobody knows who they are. All the true Huskers in here. How many of you know Mike Rozier? You know the name, right? Okay. All right. Teens in the back, do you know Mike Rozier? Do you know that name? No? You see, in one generation, it doesn't really matter who he is because he's dead and nobody cares. Whatever he accomplished on the field, it's gone and done with. And you will die, and you'll be gone and done with, and two generations from now, nobody will know who you are. That's a great way to close the service, isn't it? That's the message of Ecclesiastes 2. It doesn't matter if you worked hard or not. Nobody cares. You're dead. You won't care. You're dead. Well, we're going to have to cheat and skip and go into just the beginning of next week. Look at verse 24. Contentment is only found in Christ. There is nothing better than a man that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. You see, God, we work and we toil, and we do it in order to achieve some sort of satisfaction. And there's nothing wrong with finding satisfaction. In fact, what we find is to be satisfied with what God gives you now. You got a job, be satisfied with that. That doesn't mean you can't look for another one. It's not complacency, but it says, I've learned to be content in what I have in Christ. I hope you see a difference here. We go out and we look at man, and unfortunately sometimes adopt, trying to find who they are, trying to find a real meaning of life into all the work that they do with their hands, all the fun that they can have. I heard that in Labor Day there was just a bunch of arrest in Chicago. 13 murders took place. I couldn't believe it. And I asked myself, what in the world was going on? Everybody had the day off, didn't know what to do, and so they went around shooting each other. Isn't that about right? Why is it that we try to get our kids to be involved in this or that, whether it's sports or it's Cub Scouts or it's something going on at church or it's something, some kind of sport they get into? Maybe finding a job. Why? Well, because even though it's not a biblical proverb, it is true, and it is biblical. When you're bored, you'll find something to do, and it'll probably get you into trouble. I think it goes more like idle hands as the devil's workshop. We look at the world, and they're trying to find satisfaction in what they can get, and how drunk they can get, and how much work they can accomplish, how high up the ladder they can go. But when we understand that's not what life is about, but that God is gracious and good to us, and that we should enjoy and be satisfied with what He gives us now. Do you see the difference? Our joy then is in who God is and what He has done for us, instead of what we can achieve ourselves. In the end, Solomon says, as hard as you try, you'll never find true happiness in what you can do. Let me remind you of the story of the guy that made rocks. He was a tall mountain, and he's there with his chisel and his hammer. And he would take and he would chip away at the mountain. His job was to make rocks, stones. It'd be used for various things. He's out there. He's not happy. He says, "Boy, it's hot out here. The sun is blazing down on me. You know, I wish I was the sun. Boy, just think about what I could do. I could really blast the heat. That's probably something that's good to do. Because, you know, that's hot out here. That's probably where I want to be." Well, along gets his wish, and he becomes the sun. And as the sun, he burns hot. The people are sweating and complaining. He's thinking about how powerful he is and how much light he can shine. Then the clouds roll in, and it begins to rain. And he no longer has an effect that he thought he would have. So then he said, "You know what? What's stronger than the sun? The clouds." So he wishes to be a cloud. So he gets his wish and becomes a cloud, and he becomes a ferocious storm. I mean, the wind and the rain, the floods. And he sees how powerful and great and mighty that he is. Although he recognizes down there that mountain that he was working on. And he noticed himself, you know what, that mountain just doesn't move. He tries and tries and that mountain won't split. He says, "You know what I must need to be then? Is a mountain." So he wishes to be a mountain. He's warned, that's his last wish. And he becomes a powerful mountain. Indeed, the sun beat on him, and the wind and the rain came upon him, and it did not move him. And then he began to feel a pain right there on his foot. And he looks down, and you know what he sees? He sees a man with a hammer and a chisel. And what all we're looking for, we're not satisfied with what we have. But if we find our satisfaction in Jesus Christ, if we find our satisfaction in the good things God has given to us, we will enjoy life. Instead of looking at life and saying, "We're just going to die anyway, what's the point?" We can see that God has given all things for us to enjoy wonderfully. Let's have a heart that's satisfied in God. Father, I thank you so much for today. Thank you for all that you give to us. Too often we keep trying to find something else, something ways to find pleasure and joy, some way to be satisfied, whether it's hanging out with our friends, whether it's achieving something that we can do, whether it's on the football field or maybe it's in our corporate ladder, in the job that we have. Father, I thank you that you give us ambition to do best, to work hard, to try to achieve more. But I also thank you that our satisfaction is not being found in what we could be, but in what you've already given to us. Lord, I pray that you'd help us, that we might look at this world and recognize that we, in the end, whatever this world offers, we'd rather have Jesus, because he alone satisfies our soul. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.